also with today's class, he will have finished the text in the manuscript on the catechism for the Gospel of Life. There are 233 questions, and my request would be, you may multiply, but do not distribute publicly copies, because the plan is obviously to publish. There will be another catechism for the next course on the angels, a catechism on the angels. Should also see that I promised Father Perron I will be giving some lectures on the courses that we are covering here in Ann Arbor, also at the Grotto next semester. Will not be on Sundays. It will be either on Fridays or maybe on Saturdays. I'll not be able, of course, to provide the amount of time that we have available here in Ann Arbor. In any case, I do want to give lectures on both subjects also at the Grotto, as you know, on Gratiot Avenue next semester. The schedule for the Grotto will be worked out, and you are welcome, of course, to both classes. I never really repeat myself except when I make the sign of the cross and the Our Father and the Hail Mary. And one reason, of course, is because, as you know, the first foundation of the Opus Angelorum, the new community formed some 20 years ago, has its American foundation in the Detroit Archdiocese, and in fact at the Grotto, which is where I live. Pardon me, where I have my office. I live at the Jesuit rectory at Jesu, across the street from the university. The other course on the lay apostolate, I am planning also for manuscript form. And the reason, I think I've already have told you, the Holy See wants the laity to be trained and organized for missionary work, evangelizing and catechizing. And my hope is that next semester's course on the lay apostolate will be a handbook for the laity, which, I repeat, I'm under directives of the Holy See to organize the laity. Having closed in our country 85% of our Catholic schools, having lost 85% of our religious teaching sisters in America, both since the Council, having lost 8,000 priests who have left the priesthood in the United States since the close of Vatican II. The hope for even preserving, not to say expanding, the faith in our country will depend on the laity. Those are my directives from the Holy See. And consequently, I would like to have as many as possible to attend next semester classes, including those who you think would be suitable to be trained for teaching the faith to others. I believe I mentioned that already seven bishops have agreed to work with us. And five already been in contact with myself. For example, Bishop Egan of Springfield, Connecticut. I'm not sure whether I told you this. I have 3,000 catechists in my diocese, all lay people. They need all the training they can get. As you know, they're volunteers, well-intentioned people, but so many not really really informed or well-formed in their faith. Any help you can give me, said Bishop Hagen, I'll be happy to receive it. What we're planning is a national association, indeed, international association, for training the laity to teach the faith to others. And on the first Saturday of January, I'll be in Washington meeting with the Commission for Russia, training people also to teach the faith in Russia. Gone is the day when we can depend, say, on our dear sisters, except for whom I wouldn't be a priest. The dedication of those nuns, I'm sure you know, was heroic, but there's still a handful, comparatively speaking, left. Moreover, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of the young Catholics have given up their faith, either by joining another denomination or just not believing or at least not receiving the sacraments. The magazine we started, The Catholic Faith, was just step number one. Step number two is to begin training laity, I repeat, including, of course, homeschooling parents, but not only. All of this just to anticipate the two courses we'll have next semester. Our first class today will, of course, be on the Gospel of Life. And you have, as I mentioned earlier, the complete text with such revisions as will have to be made for printing of this catechism on the Gospel of Life. There is no way we can possibly finish commenting on these questions and answers in class today. I urge you to please read and prayerfully the rest of these questions and answers, because they are, as I've said and you know, the mind of the Vicar of Christ speaking in the most forthright language, I mean it, that I've ever remembered any Vicar of Christ talking, outspokenly clear. And our nation today, America, has the culture of death. America is responsible for millions, not just within the United States, millions of abortions throughout the world. By denying such economic and political and social assistance as these poor people need, unless they limit their children by contraception and abortion. I don't think I've ever said this publicly. America is the most homicidal nation in the world, not just homicidal in our own nation, but homicidal in promoting the murder of unborn children. We are the world leader. Do you still hear me? If anyone has a responsibility for the conversion of America, it is surely we who still, thank God, believe that life on earth has a meaning, because this life is everlasting. We begin then with our questions and answers. And I repeat, provide as many questions as you want. And we'll continue our class, and I will take the consequences as long as we have to. Question 184. What is the most solemn celebration of the gospel of life? The language may seem unusual, but the reality behind this language is crucially important. The most solemn celebration of the gospel of life is the practice of loving others, even to heroism. Holy Father calls it the everyday heroism of offering oneself to care for others by providing them with the loving care which they need. In all my 44 years of teaching, that's right, 44 years of teaching theology, I never, in all my teaching days, have read any pope who tells his people they must live heroic lives and expect martyrdom. Never except the present pope. An abortion will not stop, I am confident, without blood being shed. Is the donation of organs part of this generosity? Yes, but immediately an important proviso. The donation is performed in an ethically acceptable manner in order to assist the health or even sustain the life of another person. Now, the single most important fact of physiology or of organ transplant that should be remembered is that vital organs, which are necessary for sustaining the life of the person who wants to give the organ, like, say, the heart, or would be both lungs, or both kidneys, the organs that are necessary for the sustaining of life, cannot be physiologically transplanted except from a living person. Do you hear me? And the whole medical profession has revised our American laws. They now have a description of what they call legal death. And they decide when you're dead. And those in the medical profession who are believing Catholics and understand their science tell me the doctors will make sure that although they pronounce legal death, that person is still alive. Otherwise, that vital organ cannot be transplanted effectively. Am I clear? On these living wills, I have warned you about them, and I will warn you again. may give those to whom you will assign the care of your body, allegedly dead, to give them the right to pass judgment when you are dead. And I repeat, vital organs can be effectively transplanted only from still living human beings. 186. How does Pope John Paul II express his gratitude to mothers who live out the gospel of life? I thought I should quote directly. In the face of the widespread propaganda which does not encourage motherhood, he declares, and we quote, "We thank you, heroic mothers, for your invincible love." Invincible means unconquerable love. "We thank you for your intrepid trust in God and in His love." Intrepid means you don't trepidate. You don't shake. You're not afraid, no matter what the price may be for loving your child. "We thank you for the sacrifice of your life. In the Paschal of Mystery, Christ restores to you the gift you gave Him. Indeed, He has the power to give you back the life you gave Him as an offering." In my 48 years in the priesthood, I've counseled enough women on this subject to know there are heroic women who will either carry a child, become pregnant, even though they're warned another pregnancy will kill you. Or those who, after some difficulty, some disease, are told to be sterilized. Absolutely not. Those again who are carrying a child and the mother incurs some disease, the child's life must be saved. Of course, as we've said before, it is permissible for the mother to have, say, surgery, which may cause the death of the unborn child. You may be surprised at my next statement. As a mother, say with terminal cancer, is she obliged to have surgery if she's carrying a child where the child may die? First of all, may she have that surgery to save her life? May she? Yes. Must she? No. Hear it. And provided the medical profession knows what they're doing, it is now possible to save both the life of the mother and of the child. 187. To whom especially are we to show our Christian charity? Says the Pope, we are to show special favor to those who are poorest, most alone, and most in need. Our practice of charity must be consistent. All human life is sacred, therefore must be honored without bias or discrimination. One hospital after another, one state after another, now requires that mothers carrying a child have that child somehow, as you know, examined. And it is simply policy among many in the medical profession to recommend, even urge, abortion. No matter how disabled or handicapped the prospective born child may be, this is real charity. As a human being, to carry that child to term. And as we know, we are still a highly discriminatory society. Certain races are less honored than others. How we need, say, in Detroit, I'll say it, well, some 80% of Detroit people are of African descent. Oh, how important it is to, and I repeat the Holy Father's words, to not be discriminatory in our practice of Christian charity. Can I ask you to pray for the decision of the court in Huntington, West Virginia? Remember? Did you hear the outcome of the court? The mother lost the case. The court fined her and her family and everybody who counseled her a total of $7 million. This is the first major, has received national publicity, the first major national effort to make adoption against the law in our country. And as some of you may know, it is very difficult in America to get an adoption. Well, they want to make it impossible. Talk about a homicidal nation. 188. What is the Christian community's responsibility to support new life? Notice the Holy Father here talking about Christian community. Effective programs should be implemented to help mothers, even without the help of the Father, to ensure that their child is brought into the world and properly cared for. All the homework we've got. I may have told some of you, Father Mother already had several children, was to have her next child sometime before Christmas in that year. I know the family, husband, low-paying job, no insurance to cover her delivery. She called up from Virginia. Could you possibly find a doctor who would help me, well, deliver this child? As you know, there's always a risk of, having someone else who does not know enough about medicine nowadays to say, help in the delivery. I called an obstetrician friend of mine. Told him there's a woman in Virginia who wants to deliver her child. She cannot afford hospital care. Will you make sure she gets to a hospital, help her deliver the child, and don't charge her anything? Long pause. No click, so I knew he did not hang up. Well, what do you say? All right. Later on, when I was in Washington, he thanked me. It opened his eyes. What I do is occasionally I do either give retreats to doctors, medical doctors, or give them conferences. I tell them, you've got work of reparation to do between you and the legal profession. You are mainly responsible for the murders of so many children. Let me tell you, it is hard nowadays for a Catholic doctor to remain faithful to his faith. What is their vocation to service in the gospel of life? As you know, Cardinal O'Connor in New York started a community of nuns, Sisters for Life. He would like to start also an organization of priests for life. Father Pavone, the National Director of Priests for Life, and I, we've been talking. A wonderful vocation and badly needed. It is a special call. What's his vocation? To the service of the gospel of life. Call from God to dedicate oneself in serving and preserving the life of others. This includes promoting natural methods of regulating fertility, marriage and family counseling. But my friends, let's make sure that family and marriage counseling is authentically, unqualifyingly Catholic. Sadly, so many engaged couples, they tell me, are getting advice from their parish priest, which, to say the least, is not bona fide Catholic teaching. Organizing centers of assistance in homes where new life receives a welcome. And in our country, let's make sure we arm ourselves beforehand against the agents of death that are trying to remove adoption as a legal means of preserving the life of a child who would otherwise be aborted. Forming communities for treating drug addiction and caring for minors. The mentally ill, the AIDS patients, I never said this again publicly before, but Mother Teresa's sisters are opening their AIDS center called the Gift of Peace in Washington. I was asked to give a one day of recollection, I think five conferences, to the sisters who are to open this AIDS center in Washington. I planned for it carefully. There's a real apostate in our country. There's a real vocation. And, not coincidentally, right next door to the Missionaries of Charity at St. Dominic's Parish, right next door, is a large building exclusively for AIDS patients. And they're just now finally putting an elevator on the outside of the building, of course, reaching inside, because so many of these AIDS patients are no longer able to walk. For 10 years, I have worked with AIDS patients, especially with those who are caring for them. I don't know of a single AIDS patient in Washington that in my life who, having lived, needless to say, a life that was not so edifying, I don't know of a single one who did not die repentant and in the grace of God. I tell you about the multimillionaire. His sister called me up. Would you please get my brother in this AIDS center in Washington where the missions of charity take care of these victims of AIDS? I talked to the man, a multimillionaire in New York. Your sister called me up and asked if, well, because you know you're not in the best of shape, give up all your work you're doing now and join the Gift of Peace Center in Washington, cared for by the sisters. Didn't take much arguing. He said, okay. I told the sisters, all right, but be sure he brings nothing with him, nothing else, except one suitcase. I tell you, something went wrong. The sisters provided for somebody to pick him up at the airport. Party did not show up. This wealthy tycoon could provide for a taxi. Showed up at the door, rang the doorbell. He lived about a year. I can tell you, my faith has been strengthened by what I saw happen to that man. I'm not exaggerating. Most of his waking hours, until he was absolutely helpless and had to be bedridden, he spent praying before the Blessed Sacrament and bringing his fellow AIDS patients back to God. Question 190. What is the role of hospitals, clinics, and convalescent homes? Oh, is this effort important? What a weak verb. Their role needs to be reconsidered. Their role needs to be converted. Institutions to care for the sick and the dying. That's not all they are. They should be places where suffering, pain, and death are understood in their true Christian meaning. How we need lay people visiting, for example, homes for the aged. Visiting hospitals, especially the wards where the poor people who cannot afford anything else or what the state can give them, to be visited by believing Catholics. I could not think of a better resolution you can make for Christmas. Today is what? 17th of December. Let's count. 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. Today is the first day of the novena, which finishes on Christmas Day. For centuries, the 17th to the 25th of December are specially sacred days. I'm not above making resolutions for people. During this novena, you might say to yourself, I knew I shouldn't have come. During this novena, ending on Christmas Day, ask our Lord for the grace to show you how you can practice something of this charity about which our Holy Father is speaking in questions 189 and 190. Okay? As far as possible, they should be staffed by dedicated religious. Oh, dear Lord, give us back those dedicated religious women. We have left one Catholic hospital after another. Or at least hear it. My persons who belong to the church. What a difference it makes. As over the years, my definition of paganism, I've taught comparative religion, I've got a dozen theological definitions of paganism. One of my favorites is paganism is Christianity without the cross. My dear friends, do you hear me? If we don't embrace the cross, we are pagans. God became man precisely to teach us the meaning of suffering. God became man to have a human life with a body and soul that could separate, which means that God could die. All the palliatives, the tranquilizers, the painless this and the painless that. And we are Christians. Stop your joking. Be serious. How people need, and all they really need is a loving person next to their bed. 3 minutes. May I believe you? Believe me. Can save their souls by accepting their suffering and their prospect of death with resignation to the will of God. Question 191. What is the most serious temptation to which the medical and health professions are exposed today? My friends, you've got to read a lot of papal documents to find statements like this. This Pope is down to earth. Answer. It is the temptation of losing sight of their inherent ethical dimension. that temptation to become manipulators of life or become agents of death. Medical doctors are bound by the Hippocratic Oath to absolutely respect human life and its sacredness. How I wish the medical school at Georgetown University would believe this. My 4 years of living at Georgetown before I came to Detroit, I attended the graduation of the medical doctors just received their MDs from the medical school. And I have in my files beautifully illustrated program for their graduation. Also, a revised Hippocratic Oath, but no longer saying, I will not destroy unborn human life. That was removed, dare I say it, by a once Catholic university. Number 192 is causing death a justifiable form of medical treatment. As you read it, you blink. Am I seeing things, or is this really in print? Absolutely not. Not even when the intention is solely to comply with the patient's request. It is totally contrary to the very purpose of the healthcare profession, which is to be an impassioned and uncompromising affirmation of life. Let me tell you what honest Catholic doctors tell me is the reason for the medical profession assisting people in causing death. It is mazuma, money. Suffering, dear Lord, suffering is not incompatible with the purpose of human life. Incompatible. Say that again. You better change your adjective. Incompatible. They come into the life, as mothers tell me, crying. By the way, any mother here, when you gave birth to your children, were any of your children, when they were born, who did not cry? Anyone? Susan, did they cry? And unless we're anesthetized before death, we die in agony. So far from suffering being compatible with life, it's almost, pardon me, almost a definition of life. So then, 193. What is the morality of biochemical research? Oh, Holy Father is a very smart man. He always begins his statements with something affirmative. Then he adds a but. Sometimes he uses a however. Sometimes a nevertheless. But leave it to the Pope. It promises great benefits for humanity. I'm alive today because, well, they discovered how to sew arteries and veins. So, biochemical research can surely help humanity. But it must always reject experimentation, research, or applications which ignore the inviolable dignity of a human being.